Hello and welcome to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host. Looking forward to the next 2 hours. We've got Jimmy Akin with us for both hours. And if that's not enough to look forward to, it's also Weird Questions with Jimmy. And often we'll save the Weird Question shows for when we're doing a pre-record, but it's not a pre-recorded show today. We're live. We don't have a call screener today. By a strange set of circumstances, there's no one in the building to screen calls. So Jimmy was kind enough to gather up the Weird Questions that he saves in the Weird Question vault, and we've got them. So a whole bunch of Weird Questions coming up. So a perfect show to just hang on, relax, and listen. And sorry we won't be able to take your call, but I've gotten to look ahead to some of the questions, and I think you're going to have a great time one way or the other. Jimmy Akin is senior apologist here at Catholic Answers and the proprietor of Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World. Jimmy, welcome.
Howdy, Cy Kellett. How you doing?
I'm really good. Thank you for opening the vault for us on short notice.
Yeah, no problem.
I appreciate it. Yeah. So tomorrow, new episode of Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World. I know what it is, and I'm looking forward to listening.
Ooh, what is it?
It's a limb healing.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Skeptics often say that if God can heal people, why didn't he ever bring back limbs that people have had amputated? Well, he does. And tomorrow we're going to be telling you about one. It's known as the Miracle of Calanda, and it involves a gentleman who had his leg amputated because of an accident, and then it came back.
Wow.
And it's very well documented.
All right. You can always check out Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World at mysterious.fm, and each Friday there's a new episode. And if you've never listened, you are in the catbird seat because you've got 300 of them to listen to, at least 300 of them to listen to. Check it all out at mysterious.fm. Or just hang on with us because there's a little similarity between Weird Questions with Jimmy Akin and Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World. Some of these are things that he may have covered on that program, as a matter of fact. And let's just get started with him. Andrew begins here, Jimmy. I'm an Eastern Orthodox Christian. If I got in a time machine and teleported back to post-schism Catholic Europe, let's say the 1400s, would it be a sin for me to receive the sacraments there? Would it then cease to be a sin if I teleported back to anywhere in the pre-schism Europe or post-schism Russia or Greece? Would it be a sin if a modern-day Protestant tried to receive the sacraments? Additionally, would there be any conflicts with a Catholic or Orthodox Christian from our time receiving the sacraments from a medieval priest?
Okay, so we got a bunch of scenarios here. So the first one, if you as an Eastern Orthodox Christian, you know, were transported back to the 1400s in a Catholic area, could you receive the sacraments there? Well, the answer is it would depend on the existing legislation at the time. However, if it were known that you formally adhered to a church that was in a state of separation from the Catholic Church, then under the legislation of the time, I'm pretty sure you'd be regarded as a schismatic and would not be permitted to receive the sacraments. It's different today. Today, Eastern Orthodox, even though we don't have full communion, unfortunately, yet, Eastern Orthodox are permitted to receive the sacraments on a much freer basis these days. What about if you teleported back to a time before the schism in Europe and you were in an area that later was, you know, either Catholic or Orthodox, then the churches were not in separation then. There would not be a barrier of schism, and so you'd be absolutely free to receive the sacraments, whether it was in an area that later became Catholic or an area that later became Orthodox. What if you went to post-schism Russia or Greece? Well, that would depend on the legislation of the particular church that had authority over the territory. If it was the Russian Orthodox Church or the Greek Orthodox Church, then you would be able to receive or not, depending on what that church said about someone of your status, even prescinding from the fact that you were a time traveler. You then say, would it be a sin if a modern-day Protestant tried to receive the sacraments? Well, it's going to here, Andrew isn't clear about what time period they're in or where they're at. But if in the modern day, Protestants can receive three of the sacraments, confession, anointing of the sick, and the Eucharist, in danger in a Catholic church, in danger of death or other grave necessity, provided they share the church's faith in the sacraments and so forth. So they actually could receive today. However, that's something that wasn't the case before the 1983 Code of Canon Law. So they probably would be prohibited at any previous point in history. And then he says, additionally, would there be any conflicts with a Catholic or Orthodox Christian from our time receiving the sacraments from a medieval priest? Well, again, it's going to depend on whether one is before or after the schism. But if it's before, the answer is no, there's no problem. If it's after, then yeah, there may be a problem.
Well, Andrew didn't stop there. He's got a lot more for you, Jimmy. He went on to ask this. On a previous episode, you were talking about theophanies and Christophanies and how it's possible that any of the three persons of the Trinity could be incarnate in any event other than Christ's birth. I assume the angel Jacob fought and the angel in the furnace with the three youths are such examples. However, there are
Did you say Utes?
Utes, yeah, the three.
Yeah, okay.
Three Utes. All right, wait. Now I'm thrown off. That makes me think of it's Ed Wynn, right? Is it Ed Wynn?
That Fred Gwynn.
Fred Gwynn. Yes. Okay. Yeah. Fred Gwynn.
My cousin Vinny.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Did you say Utes? However, there are also instances where actual angels have been incarnate, such as in the hospitality of Abraham. My first question related to this is, when these theophanies, Christophanies, and angels were incarnate, should we assume that they had physical bodies? My second question is, can fallen angels become incarnate? And if they can, would they have physical bodies when they do so?
Okay, so first I should explain what a theophany and a Christophany are for people who may not be familiar with those terms. A theophany is an appearance of God in nature, and a Christophany is an appearance of Christ before the incarnation occurred. So, for example, Moses in the burning bush is a theophany. God appeared to Moses in the burning bush. An example, or at least a commonly regarded example of a Christophany would be when the angel of the Lord's army, the commander of the Lord's army, shows up to Joshua. And that's commonly understood by the church fathers as the pre-incarnate Christ. When it comes to the, and as we discussed on a previous show, God, since God can become incarnate in Jesus, the Father and the Son, they're also omnipotent. They could also become incarnate if they chose, in addition to Christ's incarnation. Now, I should say a word about incarnation. From its roots, it means in the flesh. But Christ's incarnation is a special kind of incarnation where he didn't just take on flesh. His human nature and his divine nature actually form one person, and it's a permanent incarnation going forward. So once he became man, he's always going to have that human nature going forward for all of eternity future. That's not the case, or at least that's not understood to be the case, when we have angels apparently taken on human form. So we would probably not use the term incarnate for them to avoid confusion with Christ's incarnation, because his is different. Do these angels, when they seemingly appear in physical form, do they have bodies? Well, they certainly look like they do in Scripture. You know, for example, the two angels who appear alongside God with Abraham, when they go to Sodom and they're you know, scoping out Sodom and looking for righteous people and stuff, they actually have to grab Lot and pull him out of the door to get him started on his journey. And that certainly makes it sound like they're physical. On the other hand, in the book of Tobit, the angel Raphael appears to be in physical form, but he later explains Tobit's son that when they saw him eating food, they were seeing a vision. So that makes it sound like this was really a visionary experience, at least in this case, and he didn't really have a physical form. There's also some evidence from spontaneous after-death communications that could have a bearing on this, because sometimes when a person, and I recently did a couple of episodes of Mysterious World about spontaneous after-death communications. You can look them up online. And they're startlingly common, like 40 to 50% of the population believes they've been spontaneously contacted by a loved one after the loved one's death at least once in their life. And in quite a number of these, there is a tactile component such that the person feels like they were touched physically, like maybe hugged by their departed loved one. And in a bunch of cases, according to a recent study, they touched their loved one back and felt resistance. So even though their loved one was not physically there, so maybe angels could kind of do something like that. The matter is not a matter of church teaching, so it's a matter of theological speculation. And the most common medieval speculation was that angels, when they appear in physical form, do have physical bodies temporarily. And these were referred to as aerial bodies. The idea was that the angels psychokinetically, or using mind over matter, gathered together air and condensed a body out of it, which they then used. It didn't have the, according to Aquinas, it didn't have the full functionality of a human body, but it would allow them to interact with the world physically, kind of like in Avatar, let's say. But then when they were done using the body, it would dissipate back into the air. And since it was originally made of air, that's why they're called aerial bodies. Demons would have the same ability because they're just bad angels. So that's a general sketch of the speculation in this area.
Andrew, thanks for starting us off with two sets of weird questions on this Weird Questions with Jimmy Akin episode. More weird questions to come right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects home buyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Magnificat. Published monthly, Magnificat features texts of daily mass, prayers, articles, meditations, art commentaries, and more, in step with the liturgical rhythm of the Church, on the web at magnificat.com.
One of the reasons we should go to Mass is because, if you look in the Catechism, you will see the fruits of Holy Communion. And these are remarkable things that we can receive at every Mass that we attend. We encounter the risen Lord, and He shares something of His divine life and love with us.
The Holy Sacrifice of the Mass, live from the EWTN Chapel, every morning, 8 Eastern, on EWTN Radio and Television.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host. Jimmy Akin is our guest. You know, Carrie writes these ads I have to read, and he just wrote 5 words on it today. Conference, 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 conference. So let me invite you to the conference. September 26th through 29th, where it's the 10th annual, it's the 10th annual Catholic Answers Apologetics Conference. It's right here in sunny San Diego at the La Jolla Aventine Hyatt Regency Hotel, where you can get a great deal if you sign up right now. Jimmy Akin will be one of the speakers there. All of our apologists will be speaking, along with Kimberly and Scott Hahn and others. Find out all about it at the CatholicAnswersConference.com website, CatholicAnswersConference.com. The title, Learn From Me, the Parables, Sermons, and Conversations of Jesus Christ. So if you'd like to hear these wonderfully well-prepared people speaking about Jesus and about what Jesus had to say, this is the conference for you, CatholicAnswersConference.com. This hour and next, we've got Jimmy Akin with us for weird questions and a whole bunch of weird questions. This one comes from Rebecca. Rebecca asks this, Jimmy, was Genesis written after Jacob's lifetime? I'm having a conversation with a friend who believes Eve had relations with Satan, stating that the word beguiled in Hebrew means to seduce body and soul. She bore Cain from that union and that's why Cain isn't mentioned in the genealogy. She also says that's why Jesus told the Pharisees they were sons of the devil.
Okay, so to answer the question, yes, Genesis was written after Jacob's lifetime because Jacob, or Israel as he's also known, dies at the end of the book. It's kind of like that book, John dies at the end, only in Genesis, Jacob dies at the end. So you could maybe, I don't know, make that its alternate name. Jacob dies at the end. So yeah, it's written after his death. Regarding the ideas that your friend proposed, okay, it can be difficult to get someone to give up ideas like this because people get excited about knowing something they think is not obvious about the Bible. So like it's secret special knowledge that makes them feel special. But I can at least address the subject. The first thing that your friend claimed was that the word for beguiled in Hebrew means to seduce body and soul. Well, the word that Eve uses when she says the serpent deceived me in Hebrew is hishia. And hishia does not mean beguile body and soul. If you look in a standard Hebrew dictionary, and I happen to look in Halot, which is the most famous scholarly Hebrew dictionary, it does not mean beguile body and soul. It just simply means cheat or deceive. And so she could be saying the serpent cheated me or the serpent deceived me, but she is not saying the serpent beguiled me body and soul. That is not one of the meanings of this term. And this reflects another common problem when people think that that something depends on what's in the original language. They often don't check reputable scholarly dictionaries. They just go kind of on word of mouth claims about what a word means in the original language. And it's often highly inflated to support a particular theory, as opposed to being backed up by actual evidence. So hishia just does not mean beguile body and soul. It just means cheat or deceive. There is also no good evidence for demonic fatherhood of Cain, and this was not a popular theory historically. If you look in Jewish literature, for example, from the Second Temple period, that's when Jesus lived, the literature makes it really clear that that Cain was Adam's son. For example, if you look in the Book of Jubilees, which was written about 150 years before the time of Christ, it's real clear that Cain is Adam's son. In fact, Cain helps bury Adam along with his other sons and daughters. And then we even get a little extra biblical claim about what happened to Cain. There's information in there about Cain's death. It says his house collapsed on him. and that's how Cain died. And I got an episode of Mysterious World coming up on the Book of Jubilees, so you can check that out in a month or two. Also, this theory has not been popular down through history. And the idea that the Pharisees, the genealogy that she refers to that Cain is not in, that's the one in Genesis 5. And what that genealogy is doing is chronicling the promised line that leads to Abraham and thus Israel. So that's the reason Cain is not in it. He's not one of the fathers of Abraham. He, you know, well, technically grandfathers, but in Hebrew, every male ancestor was your father. So he is not in the line that leads to Abraham, and that's why he's not in that genealogy. But the Pharisees were Israelites. So they did come from Abraham. They did come from Israel, or Jacob, to give his birth name. And they did not descend from Cain. You know, the Israelites were not Cainites. And so as a result, even if your friend's theory was correct, the Pharisees would not be literal offspring of Satan. They were literal offspring of Israel. And so that usage where Jesus refers to them as children of the devil, it's clearly metaphorical.
Thank you very much for the question, Rebecca. It's Weird Questions with Jimmy Akin. And here's a question from Andrew. The video game character Kirby has a unique power. He has a nearly bottomless stomach. And whenever he consumes an enemy, he temporarily gains their powers in what is called a copy ability. If Kirby were to be received into the Catholic Church, what would happen when he eats Christ's body and blood in the Eucharist?
Well, fundamentally, it would depend on two things. One of them is how his copy power works, like whether it requires physical contact. And second, it would depend on what God's will is. Now, if when Kirby receives the Eucharist, he's never coming into physical contact, meaning normal, natural contact, with Jesus's body. What he is coming into contact with is the appearances of bread and wine. And Jesus is under those appearances of bread and wine, but he's not literally, physically, meaning in a normal, natural way, coming into contact with Jesus's body or blood. It's like if you have a host and you drop it on the floor, Jesus doesn't get a jolt up in heaven. You know, the appearances of the bread and wine fell on the floor, but Jesus himself is uninjured by that. So that's one challenge. If Kirby's copy ability requires physical contact, then that doesn't seem to be present in this case. It also would depend, even if his copy ability ordinarily would work in a circumstance like this, it would depend on God's will. If God willed that his copy ability apply to Jesus so that he gets some of Jesus's abilities, now he's not going to get omnipotence, but he might get, you know, whatever abilities Jesus had in his human nature, or, you know, including ones empowered by divine grace. If God wanted him to get those finite powers, then he would. But if God chose not to let him have those finite powers, then he wouldn't.
Thank you, Andrew, for that question. And where else can you go to get a serious theological answer about a video game character consuming the Eucharist? And it's what I find fun about it, Jimmy, that you take everybody's question seriously, is I actually learned a lot about the Eucharist listening to that. I do appreciate that.
That's part of the point. By entertaining these kind of fringe questions, we learn about the principles that underlie Catholic teaching.
Andrew had another question, so I'm going to go give you his second question. I have heard it described that God created all the humans, angels, nature, and all of our world as an author creates characters in a book. God is a creator, and humans are sub-creators. When God created the world, he gave the beings in it various souls, vegetative for plants, sensitive for animals, and rational for humans. When a human author creates a world and a character to inhabit it, let's say Bilbo Baggins, does that creature have a soul? Does that sub-created world have any eternity?
Okay, so when authors of fiction write works, they're not creating in the same sense that God does. So a world does not spring into existence. Although we have a question coming up that we may get to, which presupposes the contrary of that. But in reality, they're not making a real world. They're making a fictional or non-real world that contains fictional or non-real characters. So those non-real characters would have non-real souls if the author chooses. And I'm pretty sure that Tolkien would envision Bilbo Baggins as having a soul. It's just since Bilbo is not real, neither is Bilbo's soul. Non-real worlds would also have non-real eternity if the author chooses. The author could choose to have a non-real infinite extension into the past, a non-real infinite extension into the future, or a non-real, or possibly real, but not in the case of a fictional world, infinite extension in space. So you can make up whatever you want, but that's not going to make it real.
Thank you for both of those questions, Andrew. Let's go to Rebecca's question. Rebecca's next. I was watching Capturing Christianity with Father Lampert today. When a caller asked about a spiritual / demonic attachment to him since living in a house where a woman was murdered by her husband, it made me think of something horrible. My mother had an abortion before having me. Could this have caused a spiritual or demonic attachment to me? I also wonder if the dramatic increase in abortion rates has anything to do with the increase in depravity in our culture, spirituality.
Okay, so I'll get started on this, but I'm pretty sure I'm going to have to answer on the other side of the break because the break is coming up. So I didn't hear Father Lampert's interview on Capturing Christianity, which is a YouTube channel. So I can't really comment on the what the caller asked him about a demonic attachment in his case. But in your case, could a demon have influenced your mother to have an abortion, or could that abortion have attracted a demon? And then could this demon have been passed on to you so that it attached itself to you? Well, it's not impossible that that could happen, but we can't just assume it. We need to say what evidence is involved. You know, do we actually have any evidence that it was a demon specifically that caused your mother to have an abortion? And there's the music, so I'll continue on the other side of the break.
Oh, it's good to have a demon for a tease to keep you coming back. Hang on a couple messages, and then we'll be right back to finish, to allow Jimmy to finish his answer. It's Weird Questions with Jimmy Akin this hour and next on Catholic Answers Live. Why We're Catholic is the one book you can hand to anyone to invite them into or back to the Catholic faith. With more than 400,000 copies sold, Trent Horn's book has had a number one ranking on Amazon.com for 5 years running. Now available in softcover, bulk cases, ebook, and on Audible. Find out what the excitement is all about. Order your copies of Why We're Catholic at shop.catholic.com or at a good Catholic bookstore. Visit whyweirecatholic.com.
If you're not a Bible scholar, the full message of how the Sunday Mass readings fit together can be tough to comprehend. Apologist Carlo Broussard is here to help. Join Carlo every Friday for the Sunday Catholic Word Podcast. In each episode, he unpacks the scripture readings for that Sunday and brings them all together so you can better understand and defend the faith. Visit SundayCatholicWord.com to subscribe. That's SundayCatholicWord.com.
Is Orthodoxy an alternative to the Catholic Church? In a time of uncertainty for many Catholics, Orthodoxy can look like greener pastures. Answering Orthodoxy, the new book from Catholic Answers Press, explains why Catholics who are thinking of leaving need to think twice. There are important reasons to remain in the Catholic Church and convincing answers to Orthodox claims. Order your copy of Answering Orthodoxy today at shop.catholic.com or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Our Lord needs articulate defenders of the truth to spread the joy of the Catholic faith. Catholic Answers Monthly Giving Club, Society 315, helps you fulfill the call in 1 Peter 3:15 to always be prepared to make a defense for the hope that is in you. For as little as $10 a month, you'll help Catholics grow in faith, bring lapsed Catholics home, and lead non-Catholics to the truth. Go to CASociety315.com and join today.
Welcome back. Catholic Answers Live. A little bit of groovy music. Jimmy Akin, both hours, Thursday afternoon. The only difference to what we usually do on Thursday afternoons is it's Weird Questions. We found ourselves without a call screener. We have to have somebody to answer the phones if we're going to do a call-in show, and we didn't have anybody in the building able to do it. So we...
Well, you don't technically. I mean, Art Bell didn't used to have a call screener. He'd just say, line one, or, you know, east of the Rockies, you're on the air.
And he wouldn't, nobody was screening those calls for him?
No.
Oh, he's a brave man. He's a good, we can do that, technically.
I'm fine but with that.
I know you are.
You know.
Yeah. How would you feel about doing that? Was it too scary, Darren, to just not screen calls?
And we got a 7-second delay. So if anyone starts acting up on the air, we just dump the caller.
Yeah. We could do it with some, it's for the future though, because today we've already promised 2 hours of Weird Questions with Jimmy Akin. Mm-hmm. But we do have Weird Question music, but we also, maybe next hour we'll get to that. We didn't really so much think of it. Rebecca, however, had a question about demons the last hour. Go ahead, Jimmy. I'll just let you pick it up.
So hypothetically, the scenario she describes is possible, but just because something is possible doesn't mean it's at all likely. If you want to propose demon involvement in something, then you need to have evidence of demon involvement. You can't just let your worries or what ifs, you know, get you into a state of anxiety where you're worrying about this. That's one of the problems with leaping to the demon hypothesis. And in fact, I did a whole episode of Mysterious World about why we should not just leap to the demon hypothesis and the kind of evidence you need if you want to propose demonic involvement. That's episode 188. So you can go to mysterious.fm/188 to learn about why we should not leap to the demon hypothesis and what kind of evidence we need. So in this case, we would either need evidence that a demon led your mom to have an abortion or that it was attracted by the abortion. You know your life story and I don't, but I suspect there is no substantial evidence that either of those is the case. And only after that would we then address the question of could that demon have then attached itself to you? And we need evidence for that. So do you actually have evidence of demonic activity in your life as opposed to just, you know, bad stuff happening? Because just because bad stuff happens, that happens to everybody. And it doesn't mean it's a demon. So, you know, unless you have evidence that a spirit is doing things that are preternatural and that this spirit has an aversion to the holy and a hatred of mankind, as opposed to just being unlucky or, you know, having personal issues you got to deal with, I wouldn't see any evidence for a demon. So demons are scary, and that's why we shouldn't leap to the demon hypothesis without actual evidence for it. On the second question you ask about the increase in abortion rates, at least in the last few decades, does that have anything to do with increasing depravity in our culture spiritually? Well, I would say, yeah, abortion and free access to abortion is both a result of depravity. It was depraved that the Supreme Court ever authorized it. And it's also a cause of depravity. Because when people commit grave sins like abortion, it leads to a more depraved moral state. So abortion is both a result of depravity and a cause of further depravity.
And thank you very much for the question, Rebecca. It's Weird Questions with Jimmy Akin this hour. Katerina wrote this, Jimmy. I have a weird question pertaining to guardian angels and reincarnation reports. Mm-hmm. Do our guardian angels get transferred to other people when we die? For example, could my guardian angel have guarded another person who died at the same time I was conceived? Is it possible that reincarnation reports could actually be not the memories of the past lives of our souls, but the past assignments of our angels, and somehow the knowledge is infused into our minds through our angels guiding and informing us?
Okay, so we don't know whether our guardian angels get reassigned once we're safely on our way to heaven. And we'll have another question on this subject later in the program that we may get to, but it's possible that they do get reassigned. So hypothetically, could an angel transmit memories of one of its past wards to its current ward? Well, yeah, in principle, it could, hypothetically. You know, it could let you know on some, let's say, subconscious level that, hey, I used to be guarding this other person and here's what they were like. But why would an angel want to do that? Because it would confuse you. It might make you think that you used to be this person when in fact you're not. So it doesn't seem like the kind of thing an angel would do. Also, Occam's razor, you know, which is don't multiply entities beyond what you need in order to explain the data, would recommend that we don't propose an angel as the transfer medium for this information about a previous person, unless you have evidence that an angel is involved in transferring this information. Don't propose an angel as the one that's doing it. There are other explanations for memories of apparent past lives that, you know, explain them. I have my own theory of what explains these. And this is assuming we're not talking about ones that are just random chance or people imagining stuff, but where there's actually something that goes beyond random chance that a person has information they were never exposed to that turns out to be accurate. And that does happen in some cases. But there are other ways to explain them, like they're kind of complex to go into right now, but I devoted two episodes of Mysterious World to Modern Reincarnation Research. They're episodes 275 and 276. And particularly in 276, that's where I go into the theories. I discuss the research in 275, and then I go into the theories that could explain the research findings in 276. So go to mysterious.fm/275 and mysterious.fm/276. And you can hear all about that. And I propose models that I think I propose a model that I haven't seen in the literature before, but I think it explains what are known as cases of the reincarnation type better than other theories. And the theory I propose is fully compatible with the Christian faith. There's no actual reincarnation involved.
Check it out, Katerina. Thank you very much for the question. On we go. Robert asks this. What do you think an alien gray meat would taste like? And would it be a sin to eat one?
Well, probably under normal circumstances, it would be contrary to the respect for the dead to eat a gray alien, assuming they're intelligent biological creatures. You know, they're not animals. So consequently, we should treat them like we treat other intelligent beings. Now, there may be some circumstances like, you know, the famous plane crash in the Andes, where the only way people survived was by consuming the parts of, you know, part of the bodies of the dead. That's a very unfortunate, undesirable circumstance, but it's possible that cannibalism might be justified in those circumstances, and thus it might be possible to eat part of a gray alien in such circumstances. You know, if you and the saucer you're on crash in the Andes or something, and that's the only food available. You'd also be taking a big risk because gray aliens are going to have alien organisms in them. And those alien organisms, you might not have any defense against with your immune system. So this is a very risky thing. But, you know, if you're crashed in the Andes and this is the only way to survive, then it might be justified in that situation. There's another risk, too, which is if you eat an alien, you might set off an interstellar incident. So it's not just you who's on the line. If aliens who can fling themselves between the stars decide to stomp Earth, they're perfectly capable of doing that. All you got to do is throw asteroids at it until you've killed every human being. So you're taking a risk there.
Don't give them ideas, Jimmy. What do you do?
Yeah. However, what would it taste like? Well, obviously chicken. Of course, gray alien is going to taste like chicken.
Of course it is. Robert, thank you very much for the question. It's Weird Questions, in case you didn't know it, with Jimmy Akin on Catholic Answers Live. Dennis asks this. If DNA haplogroups have proven all humans came from Africa roughly 100,000 years ago, why did God not choose an African man to create a covenant with, and likewise not choose to become incarnate with an African as Adam was? Wouldn't it have been most fitting as Jesus is the new Adam?
Well, God wanted a bunch of people to be saved. You know, he wanted Jesus to be the firstborn of many brethren, and he wanted those brethren to come from the nations. So he wanted humanity to spread to a certain point before he sent his son to redeem us, and spread to an even further point before his son returns and we have the resurrection of the dead in the final judgment. Well, he thus wanted to wait, and by the time arrived that he wanted to send his son, mankind had spread all over the world, every continent except Antarctica at that point. And subsequently, we got some people on Antarctica. What was the situation where Jesus incarnated? It was in Israel, in the Promised Land, in Roman Palestine. And that happens to be at the center of the old world. It's between Asia, it's between Africa, Europe, and Asia, or I should say Africa, Europe, and Asia. And that's the nexus that made it very easy for the gospel to spread to people all over the old world, because Israel is at the choke point where those continents meet. And so it was an evangelistic aid. If God had his chosen people right there at the crossroads of the old world, and if he sent his son right there to the crossroads of the old world. Now, humans apparently evolved in sub-Saharan Africa. And if you think about the location of sub-Saharan Africa, that would make it harder. If his son incarnated there, you know, there weren't any major civilizations like the Roman Empire that had nice roads that they built to to extensive roads that they had built to all kinds of far-flung places. And so it was, largely a jungle and grasslands in sub-Saharan Africa. So if the Son of God had incarnated there, there wouldn't be any convenient transportation to spread the gospel throughout the world, and it would have impeded the flow of the gospel. Also, the Pax Romana, the peace imposed by Rome, also facilitated this, as did the developed economy in comparative terms of the Roman Empire. And so all of these factors were in play. Now, we can't say for sure why God didn't choose to have his son incarnate in sub-Saharan Africa, but this would be my speculation. He wanted his gospel message to reach bunches of people, and the Pax Romana, with the Roman Empire's road system and the Roman Empire's greater economic development, all those, were factors that allowed the gospel to spread more quickly. And so I could see that being a plausible basis for why God chose to put his chosen people in Roman Palestine and have his son incarnate there.
Dennis, thank you. That brings us right to the break. We'll be right back with more weird questions for Jimmy Akin right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Hello, this is Archbishop Salvatore Cordiglione of San Francisco. Keep your dial tuned to Catholic Answers Live.
In Morse code, the sequence SOS is a distress call. It's been said that it stands for Save Our Souls. Well, right now our world is in big trouble, and we're putting out an SOS call for help. Will you answer that call? St. Paul Street Evangelization, a Catholic nonprofit, has hundreds of teams who share the good news with souls who don't know Jesus. Catholic Answers is supported in part by St. Paul Street Evangelization. Visit streetevangelization.com to get involved.
EWTN Heavenly Hints.
Read any good ones lately? You know, those inspirational words in your church bulletin or that scripture in the readings, a phrase from a hymn? Don't just copy or clip to leave forgotten in a drawer or book. Make them at home in the most mundane spot you know, inside the cabinet door or clothes hamper, tucked away inside your handbag or the tissue paper holder. God lives everywhere. His words should as well.
A Heavenly Hint from EWTN.
There it is. A little bit of the Weird Questions music. I love that Weird Questions music. A little bit of theremin in there. And it is Weird Questions. We got a whole bunch of weird questions that Jimmy gathered up for us. And we're pitching them back to him, and he's answering them. And this one comes from Tim. Suppose that we discover that the gift of creativity is much more literal than we thought. And then when someone crafts a fictional narrative, it creates an alternate world, a sort of pocket dimension that follows their story. Would an author who tends to write dark stories without traditional happy endings have a moral obligation to write sequels to all his or her works and right any wrongs or evils in their no longer fictional world?
Okay, so this is a counterfactual because we have no good evidence that this actually happens. But I'm going to answer the question as it's phrased. Suppose that when you create a fictional universe, it creates a real parallel world where this happens. Okay, you are then writing events that affect the characters in the story. And you, if you know that's what's happening, are responsible for what you write. Now, if you don't know that you're affecting the lives of these people, then you're not responsible due to lack of knowledge. But if you know that what you write is going to happen to real people, then you would be just as responsible as if you did it to real people in this world. So if you voluntarily write that a character gets murdered, then that you murdered that character. You may have used an agent to do it, other character in the story, but that's the equivalent of hiring a hitman to kill a person in this world. So you would be responsible for what happens to these people, and it could be a sin, and you could need to write sequels to fix things. If you'd like to read a really well done and fascinating exploration of this topic, I have a novel to recommend for you. The novel is by John Scalzi, and it's called Red Shirts. Now, Cy Kellett, I'm sure you're aware of the idea that says on the original Star yes. Trek series, it's the guys in the red shirts that tend to die because they're the security agents. There's actually, that's not fully true, but that's the idea. And so in John Scalzi's novel, Red Shirts, we're in a Star Trek-like universe. It is basically Star Trek with the names changed. And we're on this starship that's the equivalent of the Enterprise. And just like on the Enterprise, the bridge crew goes off and, you know, for landing on other planets and stuff like that. And they bring along some of the lower deckers with them to do scans and security and things like that. Uh-huh. And the lower deckers start to notice that the bridge crew always survives and it's us who's getting killed. What are we going to do about this? Our time is limited. And so they try various things to address the situation. And it's also a comedy novel, but the lower deckers realize our heads are on the chopping block here. We've got to do something about this. And what they end up doing is travel into the universe where the writers, they deduce that they're on a TV show. And so they travel to the universe where the TV writers live and they confront the TV writers about what's happening to them. And the novel has three epilogues. And in one of the epilogues, one of the characters in the real world goes to a Catholic priest and asks about the morality of this situation. Also, we have other epilogues where the writers are like having nervous breakdowns, realizing what they're doing to real people. Yeah. Severe case of writer's block after you realize you're really killing people. But the Catholic priest in this one epilogue actually gives a really good answer. And so if you want a very fascinating explanation of this issue, get John Scalzi's Red Shirts. But I got to warn you, it contains a little bit of crude material. So you kind of got to put up with that. But otherwise, it's genius.
Tim, thank you for that question. For some reason, it made me think of Harold and the Purple Crayon. Do you remember that story, Jimmy, the book, Harold and the Purple mm-hmm. Crayon? Oh, it's a children's book where the kid has a crayon where he can create a world with the crayon. He can create whatever he wants. And so that would mean the guy who created Harold with the Purple Crayon created a world in which you can create more worlds. And then this would be an endless.
This is getting recursive.
Yeah, recursive. All right. Well, Tim, thank you very much for the question. And Kimberly asked this. It says in the Bible that humans were created a little lower than the angels. I've seen this interpreted to mean that all physically embodied beings are necessarily lower than angels in power and intelligence because angels are pure spirits. But suppose that there were a physically embodied being that was exponentially more powerful and intelligent than humans currently are. For example, a sentient AI embodied as a Matryoshka swarm orbiting a gigantic star. Could such an embodied being become greater in knowledge and power than the angels, or at least some of them? Why or why not?
So you do hear this argument that all creatures of pure spirit must be higher than creatures that are like us, that are mixed spirit and matter. That's not church teaching. That's theological speculation. And frankly, I find it unsupported theological speculation. The truth is we do not know the limits of angelic power. We know that they can't create things out of nothing on the top end. So we know they can't do that. But below that, there's a huge spectrum. And I don't know why that spectrum has to stop before you get to humans. Mm-hmm. So as far as I'm concerned, there could be angelic monkeys or angelic microbes that are not as powerful as human. They're just made out of, you know, spirit rather than matter. But there, if any such spiritual creatures do exist, we haven't been told about them. So I don't know that they exist, but I don't see any reason why they can't exist. And so I would consider it hypothetically possible that a material creature could be more powerful than some spiritual creature. You know, I would say a human with a human soul is going to be greater, certainly in the spiritual sense, than an angelic monkey or an angel microbe.
Mm-hmm.
I'd have some issues with the idea of an AI, because I don't think AIs can possibly be conscious. So I don't think AIs have a spiritual dimension. It's possible, though, that an AI could have more physical power or more calculating ability than an angel monkey or an angel microbe. But I wouldn't say that an angel monkey or that that an AI would be conscious the way an angel monkey or an angel microbe would be.
All right. I hope that was helpful to you. I don't know what a Matryoshka swarm is, but maybe I'll look that up.
It's basically a way of harvesting sunlight from a star.
Oh, okay. Like a Dyson sphere, but just not all filled in. All right.
Yes.
Dennis asks this, can you have your iRobot or any robot or AI thing we come up with in the future do work for us, work on Sunday? What a great question, Dennis.
Well, interestingly, we can do work on Sunday as long as, you know, if we're required to and we otherwise take time off, you know, get appropriate time off, and provided it's not work that would interfere with the proper enjoyment of the Lord's Day. Like if you go volunteer at a soup kitchen or something, or if you're doing something that breaks you out of your routine, you know, like if you sit at a desk all day during the week, but then you go do some physical activity like yard work on the weekends to get you out of that activity, that just sitting in your desk all day, those things are fine. Having said that, this proposal of using a robot to do labor on Sunday is actually very similar to a concept that has been used in the Jewish community, because Jewish people are forbidden to work on the seventh day, but Gentiles are not. And so there's an actual custom in some parts of the Jewish community to employ what's known as a Shabbos goy. Now, goy means a member of the nations, you know, a non-Jewish person.
Okay.
And so if you hire a goy to work on the Sabbath or Shabbat, that person is a Shabbos goy. And you can have the Shabbos goy come over and turn on and off your lights for you and do stuff like that on the Sabbath. Now, this runs into some potential conflict with Exodus 20:10, which says, the seventh day is the Sabbath for Yahweh, your God. You will not do any work, you or your son or your daughter, your male slave or your female slave or your animal or your alien who is in your gates. So I think the custom of the Shabbos goy actually conflicts with Exodus 20:10. Having said that, robots do not have conscious experiences. They are not tired out. They do not need a day of rest. And consequently, you could have a Shabbos bot, and you could have, or a Sunday bot, and you could have the bot do activity for you on Sunday so that it doesn't interfere with your enjoyment of the Lord's Day.
Yeah, but then you put a Shabbos goy out of work. Come on now. It's these robots.
That's the nature of creative destruction.
Tad wants
technology
to know this.
Replaces human, technology replaces human later, and we all end up better off for it in the long run.
Yeah, right. How much does the moon weigh, Tad asks?
The moon weighs 16 times 10 to the 22nd pounds, or about 8 times 10 to the 19 tons. Or put in other terms, it's 1.2% the mass of the Earth.
That amazes me. I had no idea it was so much less mass than the Earth.
Yeah, it's really lightweight compared to the Earth.
I would have been like, I would have thought like a third probably. I had no idea. Tad, thanks for asking that. That's fascinating. All right, we got to take a very quick break, but we got another hour with Jimmy and lots more weird questions coming up. With apologies to all the Shabbos goy going to be put out of work, but you can get retrained and do something else.
Shabbos goyim.
Oh, goyim. Shabbos goyim. Oh, the plural. I see. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Learn to fix robots. Then you'll be all right. All right. We're going to take a very quick break. As I said, we will be right back with more weird questions for Jimmy Akin on Catholic Answers Live.